Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 17th, 2005. This is disc 2 of 3 discs for the forum Uncomfortable Neighbors, Vecinos Incómodos, being presented by Jim Tiffany and Rosemary Lopez Tiffany in the Creekside Room.
What does that mean?
One of the things Rosemary does is turn down the lights. Everybody has something that they use to get attention. We have in many groups, there's it never fails. Somebody will say, okay, you want to get attention? What do? Big old whistle. And we're going to talk in just a minute about what a whistle means in Mexico. Okay. So, anyway, we wanted to finish up real quick with family discussion. And what we usually talk about is the roles in the family. So the traditional family roles and what you see when they get here. What dad is a traditional wage earner. Mom is a traditional stay-at-home person who takes care of kids and cooks and knows all about family stuff. The oldest daughter in the Mexican family is a really important person. She's mom when mom is not around. And typically, she's very, very responsible. She knows how to do stuff. She knows how to cook and sew, make clothes, repair stuff. She knows how to maybe that's an oldest daughter here or something. Anyway, the oldest daughter, you have her in your classroom, she's very responsible. She's worried about the other kids because she is looked to as mom by the others. The oldest son is very important also in the family. He is dad when dad's not there. And you will see, like in medical situations, you'll see mom go to the doctor with a 16-year-old boy who will be the one that she will look to for major decisions. And she'll go along with what this 16-year-old boy says. Because when dad's not there, he is, in fact, dad. That's the way it is. They're real important and to the other members of the family. I'll just tell you quickly that we had a situation where a farm worker got in a fight and killed somebody. The lawyer, that was here in Okanagan County, the lawyer of this guy is a 26-year-old man, called me and said, you know, I don't know what the problem is. I can't seem to communicate with my client. It's like there's this wall between us, even though he speaks English fairly well. So what I say is, tell me about your family. That's the first thing you say when you want to know a situation with Latino. Tell me about the family. So I said, what happens in your office? He says, well, they all come in, mom, dad, a couple older brothers, a bunch of kids. I sit them in the waiting room. I bring him in my office. And I said, well, there you are. You put this barrier between this guy and his family, you know. Because he's not an individual. That mom and dad are really important to him. And those two older brothers are critical. You got to involve them. Well, he had problems with confidentiality and all this stuff. Latinos define confidentiality differently. And so, because we're not individuals here. And so, he had a little trouble with that. But a few weeks later, he called me back and said, the way he described it was, it's like a dropping of a curtain. He said, as soon as mom and dad and those two older brothers were in the room, we're all on the same page. And we all, it was just fine after that. So anyway, that's the, and maybe the youngest son we should refer to.
The youngest son is generally spoiled. You know, I think in most families. But for Mexicanos, the youngest son is generally spoiled quite a bit. He can do no wrong. So if you discipline the partially the youngest son, then you may have the whole family at your doorstep. So, because they, you know, they generally cannot see that he's done any wrong. And so he's usually pampered, and those are the ones I think I have the hardest time with at school. Because when you try to meet with the parents, they don't understand what you're saying. And that person is given generally a lot of freedom to do as they wish. And they may only be 5 years old, but they have a lot of freedom to kind of be on their own, do their thing. Yes, you had a question.
With only sons, or they're both the oldest and the youngest, does it tend to be more responsible or more dominant?
That's a good question.
What was your question?
When there's only one
if
son,
it's an only
the oldest
son.
And the youngest. Do they?
Oh, good question.
You know, like Daniel, we have one of those in my family who married into the family. He's an only son. And he really reminds us all of the youngest son kind of situation.
But he also tends to be really responsible. I mean, like, they really are very... Only children seem to get a lot of our attention anyway. So he tends to be... This guy we're talking about tends to be very, very responsible. But also, you also see the other side of him where I think mom had a lot of influence on babying him, taking care of him.
Yeah, good luck if you want to criticize him. Wow.
They're tough. But also tough is that each one has a role. Each person has a role. As Jim mentioned, the women, the girls, the boys, and each one accepts their role. They accept it without a lot of complaints. I mean, in my family, those above me, because I was like the middle child, those above me, mostly my older brothers, went off to work, and that's what they did. They did the field work. They supported the family. Very few of them went to, I mean, well, they didn't go to school, actually. They went in the primary years, but that was it. But they don't complain. I mean, they're not off telling me, because I went off to college, that you know, putting me down or anything. They accept their role. Sometimes it becomes difficult if you step out of your role. For example, the women who come here from Mexico all of a sudden find that they have to go to work. And so they're expected to follow their female role at home and do all the washing, cleaning, everything that they normally did back home, plus go to work for 8 to 10 hours, and then come back and make sure that they have, you know, breakfast and dinner and lunch on the table at all times. And when she refuses or starts to complain, that's when domestic violence begins to occur. And we see a lot of that. I mean, we hear about it. Because all of a sudden you've stepped out of your role, and the man of the house can't understand that at all.
The reason we talk about family, that we chose it today to talk about as one of the two most important aspects, is that it's at the top of the pyramid of values in the Latino world. It trumps all the other needs, especially the individual need, because it's not about you, it's about your family. And so what happens when that 10-year-old Mexicana girl stays home from school to take care of the 3-year-old girl? That happens regularly. And that's okay, because the family need is more important than the personal need.
Now, on top of that, they won't call in and tell you that that's happening.
Why should
they?
Right.
That's true.
Right. And we criticize that. We say that Mexicans don't support education. Look, there's proof of that. What it's proof of is that the family need is more important than the personal need. And that's all it's proof of. The 14-year-old boy will drop out of school to help dad pay the rent. He'll go to work because the family need is more important than his need for an education. Now, we may not like that. You know, that's not our way. But that's the way that it is. That's their way. Yes, you have a comment.
You referred slightly to the sense of confidentiality of the kids in the family. And my sense is that means that I'm just curious how that plays out. I have to look at it, because that's accepted. Say that in my experience, I've had students say, I can't pay for this. We've got stuff going on in my family. Uh-huh. So I will get sort of a tiny glimpse of, you know, I can't afford the book right now. There's stuff happening here. Or, that's a bit of confidentiality, but just curious how that plays.
It's, we talk about one of the other characteristics is open and closed. And what we discover is that Latinos, by their own description, are closed. They're closed people. It's not for you to know anything about me and my family. Social workers, medical people have a heck of a time getting a family history out of a lot of people. Now, that situation does not happen at fiesta time, you know? When everything's different, or if I'm sitting around with the compadres and my friends, they're going to know a lot about me and a lot about my family. And, you know, they will include you in their family discussions. If I have a friend, I remember a couple of occasions, friends of mine were invited to Rosemary's sister's husband's, whatever it was, you know. And so we get down there, and these friends of mine are just brought into the family, like welcome, like long-lost friends. And pretty soon they're sitting down there talking about all the details and everything. You know, so to us, confidentiality is an individual thing. Your secret is yours, only for you. I think in the Latino family, your secret belongs to the family. That's kind of that, what we were referring to with that.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it, but in describing the family, family gets real big right away. I mean, that's, people say Latinos have such big families. Well, part of that is true, you know, but part of it is that you will become a member of my family. If, for example, if you were a sponsor at my wedding, and you were, because I don't know how we do weddings here, but Mexicanos tend to, you will be the sponsor for the knife, and you'll be the sponsor for the shoes, and you'll be the sponsor for the dress, and you'll be the sponsor for the music. But all of a sudden, those of you who were sponsors, you are now a family member. You will always be seen as a family member and be thought of as one. And so family becomes real big right away. I mean, you know, if you took someone to baptismal, or if you were the godparent or quinceañera, that's another 15 people that become 15 members of your family right away. So it gets big right away. But also, going back to the roles are really tricky, because sometimes we just, for example, we assume that in PE, in high school PE or middle school PE, we assume that the girls that don't want to bring shorts, because that's part of the expectation, I guess, is that you wear shorts and you wear whatever the outfit is that they ask you. Sometimes the girls refuse to do that. And it's not that they're being just rude about it. It's just that maybe at home that's not allowed, you know? And we don't know that.
How old were you when you wore your first pair of shorts?
Pretty old.
Come on.
Well, I was married for 22 years. And
not to Jim.
But I was married 22 years to a man from Mexico. And he and his family are very, very different than the way I had been born and raised. And so one of the things they didn't tolerate was shorts or short sleeves. You know, you couldn't wear short sleeves. And if it was, you know, revealing, you couldn't wear that. Or if it was short, of course, that wasn't allowed. And so how old was it when I got married? 42 or 43 years old is when I first wore shorts. And so then I get married to Jim. You know, my husband over here on this side, he was really strict and different and, you know, didn't tolerate a whole lot of things. His family had a major say on what we did, where we went, how we did things. And then I get married to Jim, who's so different. I mean, it's not short enough, it's not low enough for him. It's not tight enough, you know? And I'm like, I mean, talk about going through two different, worlds, where all of a sudden it's like, yeah, that looks nice, but it's not short enough, you know, and that was like, wow. And it took me a long time to walk out of a house, you know, with shorts or anything that appeared to be somewhat revealing. It was hard. But, and that's why I say, sometimes our girls, the girls in high school won't wear shorts, but it's not because they're being rude. It's just that it's maybe not something that's acceptable at home. And we always, you know, we never really stop, I don't think, to really think about why is it that this is happening. We just assume that they're just refusing to do certain things. What was I going to talk about? I wanted to mention just an example of it, of a girl in our area in East Wenatchee who was a great tennis player, really great tennis player, high school girl. And she wanted her dad to come out and see her because I really think she had a good, future in tennis playing. And so dad went out to watch her one day and he came home totally upset. I mean, very, very upset. She was wearing one of those little cute little skirts that you wear in tennis. And he came home. She thought she had done great. You know, came home and dad just blew up. Dad just blew up. Well, the next thing we know is that she did commit suicide. You know, she couldn't. And dad, my understanding, was a good man. He was a good father, very good father. But she was stepping out of that role that he wasn't used to in a different country and doing something different that he just could not tolerate. And that's what happens, is all of a sudden you find yourself in two different worlds having a difficult time. Going to college for me was really hard because I was married by then. I got married in high school. I was a junior. But by the time I went to college, I had a five-year-old. And trying to convince my father-in-law that I wanted to go to college was hard. I mean, you would think that he would go, yay, you know, the first college person in our family, but he didn't. I mean, it was a fight. It was a fight every step of the way just to allow me to go to Central, you know, and live with my daughter off campus. But he couldn't understand that. He couldn't understand, number one, why I wanted to go to college, why I needed a further education. You know, what was I going to do living on my own? You know, it just went on and on. But we fought him, and I ended up going. So we won that battle. But it created problems because he never, you know, every time he saw my ex-husband, he would just let him know that he wasn't happy with the decision for me to go. So it's not easy. It's not easy for kids to leave the responsibility because when you have a certain role, you know you have a certain responsibility. And for you to step out of that, I mean, it's a real battle within because you feel that you are leaving that responsibility and up to others, and you're going and you're leaving, you're abandoning the family. And sometimes the family makes you feel like you are abandoning them. You know, they don't understand, and so they do make you feel like you've left them. So it becomes hard for both. Yes.
How helpful are organizations like you?
Like who?
LULAC.
Helpful in terms of
bridging. It was a very active. I thought there was an organization, a LULAC organization here in the city.
It's forming okay. Right now.
There's a strong one in Kansas City that tries to stay connected to the family and promote higher education.
It would be nice if we. Yeah, it'd be nice if we had an organization that was like a welcome wagon, you know.
Yeah.
Here you are in the United States, and in the United States, this is the way we do things, and you know, and these are some things that we don't do, like we don't pay the policeman anything, you know, don't try to pay the judge anything, you know, stuff like that. A lot of people need to know, but have no way to find out, except the hard way. And so I don't think that. Generally speaking, LULAC or any of the others are at this personal level of interaction. There's not much there.
We did a presentation at a school where one of the teachers wanted to know why she, as hard as she had tried, could not get the dad to allow his children to go to summer camp. And she says, I've tried and tried and tried, and I can't seem to get the kids there. You know, I've done everything I could possibly think of. And it's like, well, he doesn't feel comfortable. I mean, for you to leave your home and stay overnight is a big deal. And for them to leave and go to summer camp for a week, I mean, is big time. So she says, finally what I did was I took the dad of course had to drive, but we took him over to the campground. I showed him everything. I walked him through I showed him how safe it was. I showed where the kids would be sleeping, and he finally agreed to the little ones going, but he wouldn't agree to the teenage girl going at all. So I don't know, getting the kids here to these areas without the parents would be really difficult.
In my experience in Chicago, I'm a teacher in a high school, and all the students are rented here practically. And I mean, you think that as a high school teacher who has small children, I would have like a plethora of babysitters? None of my students will go into my neighborhood or to my house.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
It's just, oh, it just would never happen. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, and it took me years and years to ask, and we got a very close relationship before I asked him.
And you'll find that they also don't hire babysitters either.
No.
Or daycares, or the kids don't go to daycare. Kids are taken care of by a family member generally. And sometimes that family member may be very, very young too. But they don't have babysitters. They don't have a lot of nursing homes. There's not a lot of daycares, a lot of taken care of by the family members.
We have friends that several, who just won't go anywhere unless their kids are well.
Yeah.
You know, don't even bother to invite us if we can't bring our kids. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Our parent-teacher conferences are just a few.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We talk about those. Yeah. Yeah, you need to be prepared to have something for the kids to do or those extras that come, because they're going to bring everyone.
Had a comment over
there? Yes. Oh, it was just a comment that we learned this a little bit the hard way. The first year we had our Narnia cookbooks. We had our Narnia program, which is our word for child care, that children could come to in the morning, and we had made a great effort. We had a wonderful woman from Mexico who was doing the programming and so on, and absolutely nobody showed up. I mean, there were tons of kids, but nobody showed up.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the week, we sat in small groups in the village center to give feedback, and one of the complaints was that there was no activities for the children. And
that's cute.
So we learned to rephrase things so that the next year was much more successful, but we don't ever call it child care.
We had a bank who was building on the south side of town where most of the Latinos are in our town. And they wanted to know, I mean, they understood this, that the family, that they'll come with a big family. And so they wanted to know what they could do to make it more appealing for the parents to come in. And so I think they spoke with you or something. And one of the things that was suggested was to have a play area for the kids. Just specifically for the kids, and maybe some, you know, pan dulce or something, some sweet bread there. But they felt they did. They built it with a really nice little area for kids, and so the parents were able to come in and the kids would go off. And now we find that most of our banks in our town are built that way, so or have an area for them.
It works.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to move on.
Mm-hmm.
To respect. See, that we spent all this time talking about just one of these characters. That's why it takes us so long to get through them. But it's, you know, it's we're talking about cultural behavior, and it's, a lot of it is not really conscious. We just wind up doing things and behaving in a certain way because that's the way our culture, you know, tells us. It's not something that we're really aware of. And when our neighbor turns into a Mexican guy, all of a sudden his behavior is really different than ours, and we're conflicting, and we don't know why. You know, and a lot of what we call cultural collisions are going on. We save the most important term for the last. because we think that this is the foundation stone that this culture is built on. If you asked us to just use one term to describe Latino and especially Mexican culture, this is the term we'd use. We would pick respect. The language demands it. Still today, those of you who are taking Espanol know that tú and usted mean the same thing, right? They mean you. But one is the familiar tú that you would use with friends or your kids. And one is the formal tú. It means the formal you. It means it's a contraction that the original was vuestra merced, your grace. And this is the way they still speak today to strangers, teachers, anyone in authority, people you don't know, especially cross-gender. They would, that 26-year-old kid I talked to, a man who was with a lawyer, talks this way today with his parents. Would your grace like to have his glass of water now? That's the way they talk. The language demands that you be respectful.
So we say if you speak Spanish and address people, I would stay with use usted. It'll take you a long ways. I mean, it really will show that you respect that person. Tú is used mostly for kids. And whenever we meet new people, even our age, we always address them as usted. At some point, after we become more familiar with each other, they will give you permission to use tú. They say you don't have to say usted any longer. But what I find pretty disrespectful is when I hear some Latinos who address their elders with tú. You know, I don't know why they do that or who told them that was okay. But
Chicanos.
They're generally Chicanos, but, you know, I would always say use this one. If you don't use it now, you know, get in the habit of using that word.
This is something that was on a broom of a middle school. In the middle school, and it's classical American culture grafted on Spanish, isn't it? That's our American concept of respect. And it says, respect is not given, it is earned. Sure. That's America. This is not Mexico. They don't believe that. They don't believe that at all. Respect is, in fact, given. It's given to everyone. We're all children of God. We all deserve respect. You start out with respect. You can lose it by your behavior. Okay? But you start out deserving respect. That's the Mexicano concept of respect. We have lots of stuff that go to respect. Unfortunately, they're gestures, you know. The sociologists say that 30% of communication comes in the form of words. 30%. What's the rest of it?
Body language.
You know, that kind of stuff. That's most of our communication. Isn't that amazing? Well, the problem with it is that a lot of these gestures go to respect or disrespect, as the case may be. And it's really too bad when we have a gesture that we're not aware of is a disrespectful one in a different culture. Then we're in trouble, aren't we? And there's a lot of them. We talk about a lot of them in here. We mentioned whistling, didn't we? We mentioned whistling. All right, somebody usually whistles to get attention to start the class. Well, in Mexico, in the soccer game, when everybody whistles, what are they doing?
Booing.
Yeah, they're booing. A whistle is a put-down, a chiflada. That means you blew it, you did something bad. So you whistle at a Mexican, he says, you know, why are you whistling?
It's also
It's what?
Dismissal at your animal.
At your animal. That's right. That's right. And one thing that I've been doing here today all day is using this culprit right here. This is a real culprit in Mexico. This is used to indicate animals. That's a dog. But to do that, that guy in that orange shirt, what an insult. And he kind of would say, who are you pointing at? Don't you point that finger at me. You know? So how does a Mexicano say, you know, that lady, that one over there, you know. That one. That's one. Maybe a little lip action. That one with the hat on back there. You know. That's how you absolutely never point to someone.
Wave
to say hello.
No, wave in the direction.
Wave in the direction as a way to point to them? I don't think so.
That one's over there somewhere.
You don't see Mexicano doing that. The Mexicano will go over there.
Good luck.
Yeah? Yeah, over there.
You know, usually a nod to the left, the right, mm-hmm. chin, action, lip action.
Eyes.
Yeah.
Do children have to be trained? It just seems like children naturally use their finger.
I think you grew up knowing.
Just kind of, yeah.
Yeah, or being taught, I guess. Yeah. But
go ahead, Rosemary.
Another sign of disrespect is the snapping of your fingers. Mm-hmm. People really resent that. You know, it just, you don't snap at people, and especially I think from Caucasian to a Latino, it really does appear to be very disrespectful. We've had back in Wenatchee a whole. Group of people that walk off this one walked off their jobs. A whole group of them, room full of people walked off. And they called Jim at the newspaper, come quick, we need an interpreter. You know, and so he came out and the women were really upset.
Cultural interpreter.
Interpreter. They were really, really upset. We're tired of him snapping his fingers at us. You know, we're not animals.
They didn't say it that way though. They said, remember, they said, we're tired of being treated like animals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and
whoa,
he said,
what? Do you mean by that? You know? Well, he does this. He says, hurry, you gotta get going. That's what they meant by that. We're tired of that. So this one supervisor had that one unfortunate habit that led to a whole bunch of people walking off the job. It's crazy. Somebody asked if we learn that, if we teach kids that. You know, the answer is yes. And it comes from your culture. It's your culture. This sentence here, you know, five words, it's going to mean five different things. Okay, so tell me what I mean when I say this. I said you should walk. I said it. You should walk. That I was the one who said it, right? Mm-hmm. I said you should walk. I said it before I was saying it again. I said you should walk.
Not the other guy.
See, you get that? You get? Where do we learn that? Our culture teaches us that. It's not a conscious thing. We grow up learning that because we're Americans and that's the way we do stuff. That's the way our parents did it. That's the way we do it. And a Mexicano coming in from here, learning English for the first time, is not going to get that stuff. He's not going to get that. He'll get 30% of the communication out of the words, won't he? But he's not going to get the rest of that. The tone, the inflections, the song. Yes, ma'am?
Could you just comment in terms of, we sometimes talk about a whole new culture as we, whether it's the Negros or the Latinos that come here in Oriendo Caminos, but one of the things that in the last 2 years feels very awkward to me is the exchange of peace at our Sunday night service, a communion service, where when we go around and greet to begin bringing peace some of it is what female to male may or may not do. Male to male, but it just, I wish that I could enter into that with more respect, which feels like I don't want to not hug someone, because that seems disrespectful when that's what the woman is doing. And on the other hand, like, you can almost tell that someone is not comfortable, and it's often in the gender area. So, just can you give us a few thoughts about how to do that?
For me, I would dispense with the hugs. We had a counselor, I'm reminded of a counselor in the middle school, who went around giving hugs as a way to blah, 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 and was wondering why so many Latinos were not into that. And I said, man, the first time you hug that little girl and dad happens to walk in, you're in trouble. You're in giant trouble there. You know, just don't even think about it. Even if that little girl's 10 years old, you just forget it. I don't offer to shake hands with women.
Wow.
I don't. If they offer, then I respond. But usually the men do, and I do, fine. But I will go ahead and respond to what's offered to me. If you want to give me a hug at this service, well, okay, I'll hug you. but it's not going to be, you know, maybe it's my, you know, hanging around Latinos a lot. But this is a closed, not open group, especially cross-gender. And especially if, you know, if Rosemary's ex-husband was with her, you try to give her a hug and see what happens. But it's, you know, there's just a little more involved here that, you know, for contact. But my safe ground is to just stay away from it, be friendly, be ready to respond in kind, you know, but not to be aggressive and initiated. That's just my own. You had a comment.
Yeah, I was just curious if that depends on where you are geographically, because when I was traveling to lots of different churches in Mexico, we kissed everybody, which is quite different than hugging, but...
Yeah, the European greeting kind of thing, where you kiss on the cheek.
But,
yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Well, they initiated.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
It wasn't... Yeah, I was just curious,
yeah.
Is it because it's on the other side of the border, or...
You see in Europe a lot, the kind of... And Spaniards do that. And it's the kissing on the cheek and stuff. And Mexicanos who are, what would you say? Chilenos are doing that? Argentinos do that?
Yeah, it was just in a border town and in Mexico City both. So
yeah.
I was just kind of confused because it was
yeah.
both places.
Well,
I don't think
it tends to be more of a European,
yeah.
you know.
It's a European influence.
Influence there,
yeah.
You might. I think Latinos, especially from Mexico, tend to see, I mean, they treat kids as kids. Kids are allowed to just be kids, run off and play, and then when we get them at school, we're really upset because, you know, it seems like there wasn't a lot of academics taught to them. Okay, we generally find that. But they also believe that, you know, kids will be treated as kids, and there'll be a lot of hugs for the girls and a lot of hugs for the boys, and, you know, they'll be really treated like sweet little kids. But then when that girl reaches puberty age, I guess, that 12-year-old or 13-year-old, all of a sudden, it's really a hands-off. It really is. I know that in my family, that's the way it was. My ex-husband, I mean, she was forever on daddy's lap and, you know, jump and play, and then all of a sudden, it was like a totally different girl was in the room. Because now you're really treated with hands off and more of a respect, and you know the hugging is more like Jim said, the you know the pat on the back and the distance. And not every culture, I mean, not every spot in Mexico does that. You know, we're not saying that, but for the most part, I think that's what we find. And if they don't know you very well, because a lot of Latinos hug. I mean, big hugs in church. I've gone to the Catholic churches and we, you know, we hug and all that. But if they don't know you very well, the handshake would be the best.
So to leave it in Poland culture, to leave that open-ended, and say, offer a sign of greeting, as we say, to each other, people can then, we don't say,
I like that, to offer whatever you consider is comfortable to you. That could be a hello, that could be a handshake, that could be a...
Person here.
Yeah, and I don't like to hug people I don't know.
Yeah.
It could be just a nod.
You have a comment back there?
Nod, says it.
I did at one point. I was saying,
sorry.
The cultural conflicts that we have here, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out when the Minnesotan referred over Washingtonians.
A what? Over a what?
Minnesotan.
From Minnesota.
Okay.
Point well taken. Yes.
Diane, one of the things that comes to mind is sometimes before communion, as we give directions now, this is what we do, you have the grape juice in the middle, if you choose not. Possibly before the sign of peace, a spoken word of permission to engage or not engage.
I think this is, I just think something we need to talk about.
I think my comment or question was, because like Mandy, I've been at several worship services primarily Spanish in other places outside the U.S., where there was the moment, for me, when I still didn't know Spanish, it was like, oh, this is a sharing of the peace. I understand this.
Yeah.
So it happened in the Roman Catholic services as well. I was just wondering just following up on Diane's comment, what does it look like there in the
It's pretty likely that the folks there will know each other pretty well. You know what I mean? I mean, they're not strangers. And that's the key to the whole thing. If Rosemary doesn't know somebody, hell or high water, she's not going to touch you. Excuse my language. But talk about this. But anyway, touching across strangers is more of a barrier among Latinos. Yeah. Octavio Paz called them Mexicans. He said, "We Mexicans are closed and inaccessible beings. We wear masks. We like mirrors. Masks and mirrors are important symbols in Mexican culture because they hide what you really are." Yeah. Anyway.
And I know a lot of counselors who are real touchy-feely kind of people, and they love to go hug those 12-year-olds. I mean, not that they're doing it in a bad way or a negative way. I mean, it's just they're just that type of person. And so, the hug and the playfulness with that 12, 13, 14-year-old. Man, if Dad comes by and sees that, he may really take it wrong. And, and that's... That could be a real case for domestic violence in that family.
Is there a comment there? Did you have a? I'm sorry about this, but did you have a? Okay, I thought I saw you.
When you say that, he might take that wrong. He's actually not going to come to meet the teacher who's just screwed up a boundary.
Probably
he's
not.
Take it out on his daughter
Yeah. Another little item of respect and disrespect is the volume of your voice. We Americanos tend to be a little higher on the scale. We deal in louder tones. If this were happening in Mexico, I would be screaming at you here in this loud of a volume. And likely the Mexicano sitting there would be saying, "What's he mad at?" Because when they hear volume, When they hear it loud, they hear anger. That's what's different. That's an important difference between us. When I hear someone loud, I don't necessarily think they're angry. you know, but my partner here does. We'll come walking out of Macy's or something there in Wenatchee, and she'll be saying, "You talk to me, you hear that? Do you hear how rude that?" You know, and I'm going, "What? Who? Where? What happened?" You know, and I mean, we heard the same thing, but she heard somebody who was rude and angry, and what are you mad at me for, about, you know, so she, that's how she reacts, you know. Our friend Raphael came into my office and said, "Hey, you got to go down to Maid of Clover down there in the corner. There's a really prejudiced lady in there. She hates Mexicans. You ought to see her, man." I said, "Well, I can't miss that. I got to go see." You know, so I get in the car and roar down to Maid of Clover and walk in. And before I got in there, I knew what the issue was because I could hear her. She was just one of these boomers. Real loud. "Will that be all today? Okay, that'll be $3.95. Thanks, here's your change." You know, these Mexicano guys walking out saying, "Why is she so mad at me? She hates me. She hates Mexico. She's yelling at me." You know, to me, it wasn't anything like that. It was just a loud person. And some of us, some of you in here, are in that category. Some of you have the loud, imposing voice, and you have to remember that that will be a barrier.
The difference is that you operate on a much higher tones. In Spanish, there tends to be three different tones, and in English, there are five. And so if you're speaking loud and fast, then it comes off as anger. And we get a lot of, you know, a lot of Mexicanos, our friends tell us that's what, you know, that's their number one complaint, is that they are so loud and rude down over at that store or that clinic or whatever it is. But it's really not true, is that that's how they're hearing it. And especially when it comes to the clinic or to, as a receptionist, when you go to a clinic or, you know, Mexicanos are also very closed, you know, and they don't like to share their personal stuff with you. And so I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot, even the kids that I have in my classroom, if they have something personal to tell me or a message from mom or whatever it is, they will come up and they'll just, you know, and I'm like, "What is this?" But they are sharing with you. I mean, they don't want it to be shared with the whole group. And when you go to a clinic, sometimes you get the receptionist that says, "What? You're here for a bladder infection?" You know, and that turns anybody off. But her tone really turned that person off. And maybe that's what I hear, is I'm hearing the anger in that and the rudeness in that voice, whereas Jim doesn't hear it. But there is a difference. And that is their number one complaint, is that, you know, other than the snapping and the pointing, but the loudness. I walked into another gas station in our town. Oh my gosh, I walked in and this man's voice was so booming loud that he, I mean, you know, practically could have kicked you back out with just his voice. It was that strong. It was like, and I was not in a good mood. And then when I heard his voice, it made me even angrier. I was so mad that I didn't respond to him. And I thought, when I walked out, I thought, oh, he's just trying to be nice, you know.
And everything he said was friendly.
But he was so loud.
I looked how
and,
much he got it.
You know, and it was just like, gosh, I can't stand that. So
cultural collision.
Right. But another, yes, sir.
I find a similar dynamic in the others too, with hanging around African-American people who may be louder than I'm used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I can kind of.
Yeah, that's true.
Come across as anger, but it's not.
It's just a volume. I've got friends that come, they just bowl you over.
Uh-huh.
Whoa,
yeah.
Yeah.
What's going on?
And for me, it's a little scary. When there's several African Americans talking like that with a very loud, booming voice. I mean, the loudness really gets to me, but then it gets a little scary after a while. And I understand everything they're saying. So, but. Yes.
My name is Matt. I'm a potter, but because I'm a potter, there's a, like, we're running fans and stuff down the potter room. Is there a way to communicate without?
Yeah, sure. Good example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
had supervisors who have told us that, you know, sometimes they work where there are those forklifts and in those apple plants where they're you know, sorting apples and what have you. And it gets really loud in there. I mean, and sometimes they have to whistle. They have to snap. They have to shout. They have to, you know, raise their voice. And we've said that in situations like that, what you do is you explain to your staff. You explain to your group, look, I don't mean to disrespect you, but at some point, at some time, I'll have to maybe snap my fingers or shout at you to get your attention. And I may have to raise my voice, but it's for safety reasons that I'm doing it. And it's not that I'm disrespecting you. You know, basically you explain. You explain to them why you're doing what you're doing. And people understand.
Yeah.
They'll understand that.
Explain why you're, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not disrespecting you, but I'm going to have to shout at you.
Mm-hmm. And my other question is about volume levels for music. Does that fall under the same category? Because I had a bunch of Mexican neighbors for about 2 years. We got really close. Always play the music.
Mm-hmm. So music's different. Music, and we didn't get into fiesta. Fiesta, music, you know, party time is party time. You know, music can be loud. It tends to be really loud when you go to a dance. In fact, we can't stand that, the loudness of a dance. How they have the music. Yeah, yeah.
Because I call parents.
That's different.
It just is
booming.
I mean, it's just booming.
Yeah, it's booming. Thumping.
It's because everybody's got their television.
Yeah, and music's pretty much a part of the Mexicano's life. You know, I have I have a radio and television practically in every room of the house.
Room.
But it depends. I mean, if I walk in that room, click, click, and if I walk over here, click, click, and pretty soon they're all going, and Jim's going around behind me, turning them off, you know. But when it comes to, and to me, I guess because I grew up in such a large family, it's a familiar sound. It's a welcoming sound, and I may not be watching television because I hardly watch TV, but I'm listening. I'm listening to. I'm so familiar with noise. I'm used to noise around me. So.
One more thing on that. Does music selection make any difference? Like I listen to a lot of classical music. Would that be a problem? Or
I don't think so. That's one of the things that we didn't have time to talk about is tolerance, and we talked about how the Mexicano is a really highly tolerant person compared to the Anglo person. He's going to tolerate personal behavior differences a much higher tolerance, and so the Mexicano will tolerate noise and chaos and confusion where we might not. They will have, you'll see fiesta happening on somebody's backyard. That's very common in Mexico. Turn up the volume, who cares? We tolerate, that's just the neighbors. Well, if you did that in my town, we'd probably call the police. You know, neighbors are being rowdy over here. You know? Well, there's a higher degree of tolerance for that. So that's a factor too. We talk in terms of respect, you know, the handshake. The origin of the handshake is, I don't have a weapon here, you know? So,
do you have a
baseball? I don't.
Yeah.
Speaking of handshakes, what sort of firmness?
Not.
But,
usually it's a very just a
give
tap
a palm.
Of your hand.
Just give
it's
the
a
palm.
Very first time I experienced that, I thought, what, she thinks I have some kind of disease or something? You know, because I really was offended by it, and I wasn't used to it. But it was mostly just a touch of your hand, almost a rubbing of your hand, and that was it. And that's what you get. People from Michoacán, Oaxaca, that's the type of handshake you'll get.
That's a cultural collision, again. We Americans think that fishy handshake, that dead handshake, is just disgusting, you know. And Mexicanos learn that that's respectful, and so there you go, you know. So when we talk to Mexicanos, we say, squeeze that hand, you know. Another item is eye contact.
Eye contact
is a classical one. where the American says, look me, look at me when I'm talking to you. How many teachers have told us that over the years? Or parents have told us that? How many of us have said that? Look at me when I'm talking to you. Because you can't possibly be listening if you're not looking. You know? And so, well, Mexicanos don't believe that. You know? In fact, they teach the opposite. And in fact, we are the minority in the world that way. Most other cultures in the world do not maintain eye contact with you. The Asian cultures and the African cultures and the Native American cultures, they all avoid eye contact. Those Europeans and their descendants, us, are the ones that think that that's somehow mean. What does it mean if someone will not look you in the eye?
Not to be trusted.
Not to be trusted, what else? It's a bunch of stuff.
Fishy. Paying attention.
Not paying attention. What's that?
Disrespect.
Yeah.
Disrespectful.
Thinking about something else.
Thinking about something else.
Guilty.
Lying.
Lying,
got something to hide. Maybe insecure. It means all kinds of stuff, all of it negative. If we're talking about Mexicanos, it doesn't mean any of that. All of that's off. Doesn't mean a thing. It means simply that you are being shown respect. Now, that's a tough one to get around. We had a store owner in Quincy tell me that he didn't want to have Mexicans in the store. And I said, why not? And he said, because they don't look you in the eye and I don't know what's going on there. I don't trust that. So I thought, geez, is this an occasion for a quick cultural lesson for this guy? Because it means dollars and cents to him, you know. But he needs to learn that lesson. Anyway, the idea of respect and the different ways that we define it in our cultures is really fundamental to how we treat each other. And we will often say or think that that Mexican is being disrespectful, and the Mexican will think that American is being disrespectful, when in fact that's not happening. That's not what's going on. We're just reading the signal for us.
We had one teacher that said, I wanted him to look me in the eye. I kept telling him, look at me, look at me, look at me. And the kid kept slipping, sliding down under, you know, under the, finally he was under the desk, and she's like under the table going, look at me. And we said, you know, you're really asking him to be disrespectful to you. You know, he's taught at home that he, you know, you just don't do that. And my daughter had the hardest time, I think, living in both culture, both worlds, because, you know, I was born and raised here, and I grew up with certain, you know, certain things. And my ex-husband would say, you know, don't look at me when I'm scolding you. And then she'd go to school, and they're like, look at me when I'm talking to you. So it's a real, you know, they're going through some difficulty. Kids that are living in two different cultures are really having to figure out what works where. And sometimes they can, and sometimes they just give up. So.
And then came the day she looked your
And then came the day, she was, what, 15, the day that she... I don't know what they were arguing about, but the day she looked at him, he said, don't look at me in the eye. And she stood there and dared him and challenged him, and I thought, oh my gosh. So I ran to get between them because I thought, oh no, this is really a battle about to happen here. And yeah, because it's a big deal. It's a real big deal. The girls in that family, there were so many things that just weren't tolerated, and one of them was looking at you in the eye. And, you know, just... could be another book, but you know, just little things like you were not allowed to walk down the street or go to town by yourself, walk with a bunch of other girls, that kind of thing. You know, it was like you were treated as if you were. It wasn't tolerated because he said that's not what a nice female does. Walking down the street with other girls is not good. So someone had their hand up back there.
If I'm over here for a window, but I'm standing in my classroom and I am chewing somebody out individually out in the hallway, he's not looking at me or she's not looking at me, can I say, and I can just kind of try to live with that, but it's going to be hard for me. It's really hard for me.
It is.
You're a teacher. Yeah.
I'm a teacher, and I really need them to know that I'm just PO'd to the max, and I need them to stop.
Yeah.
But perhaps, I mean, I don't know if I can say, you know, you're not looking at me, but I assume you're hearing me. Are you hearing me? And just wait for the nod that is eye contact or whatever.
High school?
There's another one.
I wouldn't.
I can't do that.
I wouldn't.
Nope. You just stepped into another one.
Great. Show me.
Well, that's another hour's discussion. Now, when we talk about means of or styles of communication, it turns out that you are a direct communicator, and your Latino students are indirect communicators, and that means a whole bunch of things. But like eye contact, it's Western Europeans and Americans who are direct, and everybody else in the whole world is indirect. And one of the things that you do not do, well, if we're in Mexico, okay, an indirect communicating society, and I'm giving a presentation, I'm doing this. Here's that, and here's that, and then there's this thing over here. I'm throwing out ideas and concepts and leaving plenty of room for ambiguity and interpretation. And you, the listeners, are responsible for putting it together. It's not my responsibility. It's opposite in the United States. In the United States, the responsibility is the speaker. So it's common for us to say, do you understand? Now, in Mexico, if you say, do you understand? I mean, what you're saying is, are you so stupid that you can't get what I'm telling you? You know? Are you really that dumb? I mean, that's how it's heard. It's a control power trip. My Mexicano friends really don't like the a few black friends who keep saying, you understand what I'm saying? It's kind of like a, you understand? You hear what I'm saying? It's like a real habit in the black community to use those phrases. And my Chicano friend says, it's just a really, to me, it's a control power trip, and I don't like that, you know? But to say, for the direct communicator, is fine. Do you understand? Because you, the teacher, are responsible for communicating the point. In the indirect world, you're not. He's responsible for getting it. So you asking him, do you hear me? Do you understand me? Is just not cool. And so some of the things that that you will hear them say is, are there any questions? Are there any doubts about what I've said?
Did I explain myself?
Did I explain myself?
Because the language, is, if you say, did I explain myself, well, in Spanish is me explico, you know, which means did I explain myself. It's throwing it back on me. Was I able to explain myself to you rather than did you understand me? Because that really throws it on to them. But even the language in Spanish is me explico. So, something else we didn't touch on was, and I'm assuming you were talking about discipline during the time when it was a discipline issue. No?
Yeah, I am. It's probably true. It's true because I'm offering information.
Yeah. The other, we didn't go into it, but that was the I'm sorry thing, you know, where we expect them to say I'm sorry and or to apologize. To apologize to your neighbor, you know, for what you did, say you're sorry, and then it's supposed to be okay. Mexicanos don't usually apologize. You know, there's not typically an apology. There is an explanation. The explanation is the apology.
So they do apologize, but it's not the way we
But
think.
It's not with an I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry, the word I'm sorry is seldom used. It's used on, for real serious occasions, but the explanation will tend to be the I'm sorry bit. So if you force a kid, a teenager, especially high school, to say, tell them you're sorry, He's only doing that because you asked him to, not because he really is sorry. And what you're really doing is forcing them to resent you, to get really angry at you. And they did get really angry. And then they deal with it after school anyway. I mean, you know, they'll go around and try to figure out how to let that kid know they weren't sorry. So,
when I say to Rosemary, "Oh, I'm sorry," she says, "No, you're not." And I realize she's right. This is a crutch that we use, and we challenge, usually in a group, we will challenge you, get through a whole day and not say that. Mm-hmm. Some of you won't be able to do it. You will absolutely have to use that term, or you'll absolutely have to hear it. So what does a Mexicano do when he apologizes? He says, you know, the rear view mirror here is rusted, and when I backed out, I didn't see you, so I ran over your foot. That's it. Everybody won't say I'm sorry.
He has a hard time with that.
Yeah, lo siento in Spanish are strong terms. It's a very strong term, and you'll hear it between... You'll hear it on a soap opera, you know. You'll hear it in between lovers and so on. I'm so sorry. You know that? I mean, it's emotional. And you almost don't hear that term in daily conversation. What you hear are explanations. So what do we Americans do to the explanation? Exactly. Don't give me a bunch of excuses. I want to hear that. Just say you're sorry. Let's go. You know? You just cancel that. The whole culture of this Mexican guy who wants to give you an explanation.
And that's why when you have Mexicanos go to jail or go to court, the judge will usually say, oh, he's not showing any remorse, he's not apologizing or showing remorse, so, you know, book him.
They get slapped.
Yeah, they really get slapped with this big fine.
Juries listen for the accused to say, I'm so sorry, and so on, you know. And Mexicanos are sitting there trying to explain what happened, and juries are thinking, oh, he's just giving us a bunch of excuses, throw the book at him.
And the Mexicano gets mad when he's not allowed to explain, you know, what's going on. So in my classroom, for example, if I have two kids that are really arguing, I just say, come here, you know, what happened? And so he tells me what happened. Okay, what happened? Great, fine, you guys know the rules. I expect you to follow them. Okay, go back and sit down. So everyone felt better. I got to hear what he thought and she thought, and it's, you know, that, and I accept it.
Is there a phrase that's used? I mean, I think we use "I'm sorry" a lot. Like if you're running along and you bump into somebody in the, you know, and it's not an occasion to be sorry about, but it's just a cultural phrase that we use.
Right.
Is there something similar? In
yeah.
Is it perdón?
Perdón, the equivalent of
perdón
is
when they bump
perdón.
Into
perdón.
You. Perdón.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't mean we change the rules, though. Talking to the teacher back there. That one. That person.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not suggesting that you change the rules.
Well,
you listen to the explanation. You say, okay, I understand your explanation. Now you understand the rule you broke. Now you pay the price. You know, and everybody's
right.
Okay.
Right. You still have to... Another word, or words that are hardly used, are I hate, and I love. Well, those are words that we use in our language every day. I love that chair. Well, you can't love a chair, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
and odio, lo odio is very, very strong.
Very strong.
Very strong. I mean, I made the mistake of using it the other day in my class, or, you know, a while back in my class, and I was writing on the chart, like, oh, odio ir a la tienda, you know, I just hate going to that store, or whatever, shopping. And so I got this, you know, and I turned around to see what had happened, and it was like, they're all looking at me because I had used the word. But odio is seldom used, or hate. And I love that chair. I love that sweater. I love that. Those shoes, seldom used. So very much reserved for people.
What again, other options, other words? Maybe.
I like. Me gustan. Mm-hmm. Están bonitos, you know.
Yeah.
Things like that.
You don't love and hate things in Spanish.
Good.
Can't love red and a chair or a movie.
My grandson says, if I say, I love that chair, well, why don't you marry it and have little babies? I'm like, stop it. You know, he puts me back in my place. You know, it's like, oh, you can't love a chair.
We asked our friend, the Mexican consul, when he was here in Washington for just probably less than a year. We asked him, how are you doing and what do you think of Americans? You know? And he said, well, because he was just in from Mexico. And he said, it's pretty hard getting used to how disrespectful Americans are to each other. He said, the rest of it, you know, is fine, but he says, that's the hardest part for me. And so we asked him, tell us some examples of disrespect. Well, the first thing he said was, you go around yelling at each other all the time. Just everybody's yelling. So that was one thing. The other thing is you go around throwing things at each other. I said, well, what do you mean by that? And in his course, he's got his huge office staff and so on. So, you know, here's your report. You know? He says, why do they do that? I mean, and we witnessed this when we were at a hotel and there were a bunch of Japanese guys staying there. And one guy was standing there respectfully like this. The other guy wasn't paying him any attention and talking to the others. And he just stood there like that. There was a table right next to him, but he stood there until this happens. Ah, there you go.
Yeah, and in Mexico, we also saw that I guess that's what they're focusing on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then she'd go, I guess that's what they're focusing. And it was all one by one by us. And it takes a long time to get through a meeting there, but because in this particular meeting, we went to a bunch of teachers and actually, I don't know what they were. Teachers, were they?
Literary group.
Right, it was a large group of people. And I mean, we had gotten our meeting started, and we went around, of course, doing the handshake with everyone. And then the meeting started, and it was on its way, and then someone walked in. So we stopped the meeting, because that person had to start in one corner and go around. Everybody, well, wait until he's done. We must have done this three times because people came in, you know, later on. But no one seemed to be upset with it. I mean, we just took a little longer to finish the meeting. But that's another thing is taking the time to acknowledge or to greet the person. You know, I think we started out with that, is that person is an individual who deserves or who needs to be recognized and should be treated as a person, and so you do. The other thing that Mexican consulate said was that she couldn't get over the disrespect of when you go attend a class at the college and there's a professor up there speaking, that kids came in with their pops, mm-hmm. They'd put their feet up on the chair behind them, you know, or they'd get up and leave anytime they chose, and she thought that was really disrespectful. And speaking of that, we got into trouble with one of our Latino parents this year, actually, because the principal, we'd called the parent in to talk about a child who was the youngest boy, and he was really misbehaving. We didn't think he was ready for school. But we called him in, and so he felt it was important enough to come in. The principal was there. I mean, there were several people around the table, but the principal was there, the reading specialist was there, I was there, the counselor was there, everybody was there. Well, the principal had another meeting to go to, so she gets up and says, well, I'm sorry, I have another meeting I have to go to. So she left. Then the counselor said, well, I have a 3:00 appointment, I'm sorry, I have to leave. And then another one left, and I mean, this man is sitting there really boiling. And then the thing got really nasty real quick, and there were other issues with this little boy. So anyway, before I knew it, there was a 4-page letter that he'd written to the superintendent about mostly me. He didn't like something I did. And when we met with him, with the superintendent and another large group of people, this came out, that people were so rude that if you thought that the meeting was so important and you wanted me here, then why did you leave? You know, why did you just get up and walk out? So all those little things that we don't think anything of really can make a big difference in how we deal with people.
We're coming up to
the end.
And
we need to do that.
It was Mother's Day, and four women had a baby at the same on the same day. Three of them were Anglos, and one was a Mexican. And so they asked these ladies, "What, you know, what is motherhood all about to you?" And one says, "The greatest thing is the love they give." And the other Anglo lady says, "You need a lot of love to give to each one of them." And a third Anglo lady says, "Now we have somebody to share with." And the Mexican lady says, "I want him to know how to respect other people." That is, in a nutshell, the definition of education in Mexico. You teach respect. Respect is so important, it's so fundamental, that's what it's all about, all the time.
To a Latino person, a well-educated child is one who is well-behaved. And I know at school we know that because parents come in and they want to know how he's behaving. That's the number one thing they're interested in. They don't care if he's passing spelling or science or math or anything. I mean, they do care. But that is second on the list. You know, how are they behaving is the most critical thing to them, because a well-educated child is a well-behaved child. And if they're not behaving properly, they give you permission to, you know, smack if you need to, and where you're like, we can't do that around here. But they give you that permission because they really believe that that's part of learning. Learning is to teach them to be well-behaved. And if you go real far into the year without letting them know that you that he was a discipline problem, then they blame you. They blame you because you did not let them know when it way in the beginning, and you let it get out of control. So I'm always on the phone calling them.
We need to time check. What we'd like to do is, you know, normally we go through suggestions. Normally we pay attention to that yellow two-page sheet of paper, which is very important. But we don't have time for that. And so what I'd like to do is maybe just a minute or two to ask you if you have reactions or questions or whatever comments you have. Yes, one right there.
You have to learn about this. There's a saying, one wrong do as the Romans do. So if I went to Mexico, I would understand there's going to be different ways of looking at things and different ways of doing things. And it seems like that's respectful, just to understand, well, that's their way, and I kind of want to understand it. That's understanding their culture. But it sounds like they're coming here, and then they're seeing the way, sorry about them and us, but the way we're doing things, and they're seeing it as wrong and making assumptions. And is there like a saying in that culture, when you do as Romans do?
Absolutely. It's the absolute same. And you hear them all the time say, no estás en Mexico, you're not in Mexico now. We don't do that here. But like we said before, there isn't any welcome wagon, you know, and to teach them. And so they got to learn it the hard way. It's not that they don't want to. And I've never met anyone who said it's not important to learn English. And it's not important to learn to do stuff the way we do. I've never known anybody like that. They absolutely do want to learn our way of doing stuff because they're here. And a lot of them say they're here in this country that opened its arms to us. So they're very appreciative, and no, it's not true. There's a bad rap out there. It's not true that they're sitting back expecting us to change and do things their way. That's not really true. Everything we can learn about them, it's our advantage, isn't it? Because if we know how, the more we know about where they're coming from, the better we can deal. And to their advantage, in the opposite. And that's why we wrote that book, you know, so that they can understand a little bit how us gringos are. When we yell at you, we're not angry with you. You know, that kind of those little details we need to learn about each other.
And I think as the kids go through school, they learn the ways, you know, of how we do things here. And they are the ones really training.